Hey, this is Chris Black. Thanks for listening to the Black and Abdallah podcast, brought to you by Miller Lite, the presenting sponsor of the 2020 ESPN 1000 Virtual Fantasy Football Championship.
From State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is WMVP Chicago, ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Break. It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Black and Abdallah with you 6 to 8 on ESPN 1000 tonight. A little different. We are done at 7:30 tonight because we will bring you Jazz and Nuggets game 7 of the first round of the NBA playoffs. You will hear it right here on ESPN 1000 at 7:30. So we will be off the air at 7:30, but you will be able to hear the Jazz and the Nuggets right here on ESPN 1000. We are going to record a special segment after the show, our Back to Football Week segment for tonight. That will be tagged on this podcast that you are listening to. If you're already listening to it on the podcast, you're hearing this in real time. If you are someone listening on the radio right now, that will be there for you when this is posted later on this evening. Black and Abdallah with you. The Celtics lead by 4 over the Raptors, under 2 minutes to go in that game. The Raptors might be in trouble because the Celtics are about to take a 2-0 lead on the Raptors. And I think one thing that I want to get to is not only have the Celtics looked really good, but in the other series that's in the second round in the Eastern Conference, Bucks and Heat, Jimmy Butler last night put on a fantastic performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that he's embracing, I don't want to say like Heat culture, but I didn't think that there was a team that fit Jimmy better than the Miami Heat. You know, the way he plays, you know, Riley's embraced him. They've kind of let him kind of just do whatever he wants to do. Not in a bad way, but like he runs that team. That's his team. And I feel like he's finally comfortable in what he's doing as a star in the league, and that's showing. And I think that they have a really good chance to take down the Bucks.
Sometimes you can collect young assets and you can build a young team. But at a certain point, you have to have a star come in and take control.
Yes.
And that's exactly what is taking place with the Miami Heat. And, you know, you can't watch the Heat play and watch Jimmy Butler play without thinking about how the Bulls never had to actually give up Jimmy Butler. And I know just from where I come from with my viewpoint on this is draft night when the Bulls traded him. I was sitting at the Advocate Center next to Jonathan Hood and Nick Friedell saying on these airwaves, saying you don't have to do this. You can build around a player like Jimmy Butler. And I get it. There's going to be people responding right now in real time saying, he hasn't won anything. He hasn't even gotten out of the first round. He hasn't gotten out of the second round. He hasn't won a conference. Yeah, I get that. But you still need a star. Mm-hmm. The Bulls have 0 stars. They had a star. They had Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
They had him under control. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to let him go. So, like, the thing that's so irritating about where the Bulls are at this moment is that they are searching. And now they have a new front office who will hopefully find that guy. But that guy should have been Jimmy Butler. And last night, 40 points, 36 minutes, playing defense on Chris Middleton, switching onto Giannis Antetokounmpo, and then taking those guys on offensively in ISOs down the end and making every move for the Heat and hitting every big shot. He is a star in the league, and I always talk about like top 15 players. He is clearly one of those top 15 players in the league.
I think that to go back to what you were saying about, you know, the Bulls should have never gotten rid of him. You know, they didn't need to do that. I don't think that he would be this successful if he was here. I think with this front office, with the old front office, we might not have a new front office if Jimmy Butler stayed. You know, that could be a good or bad thing, depending on how you look at it. You know, I think that this was the best fit for him. I think that Pat Riley is an excellent, excellent talent finder and excellent culture creator for that team. Spoelstra's a great coach, gets the best out of all that young talent that's possible. And I think that Jimmy staying here, now at the time, might not have been detrimental, but ultimately might not have been as good for either franchise. It might not have been as good for Jimmy to stay here long term, and it might not have been as good for the Bulls to stay here long term.
Let me ask you a question with a question.
Okay.
Would it be good for the Bulls long term if Jimmy was here, but the new front office was here as well?
Probably.
Because I think the problem was, clearly, Gar Forman and John Paxson in this situation and Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So
I think that that Jimmy would have thrived with a different, with a change of scenery, whether that change of scenery was a new front office here or like Jimmy, I say Jimmy wasn't going to put up with Boylan. That would not have happened.
Oh, no.
Absolutely not.
But wouldn't that have been good?
Probably.
Because people want to bag on Jimmy for being a bad dude, but he knows. Like here, this is why. He saw the way this franchise was being ran, mm-hmm. and that's why he was not buying in. And then you heard the reports that were put out in the media that he was a bad guy
mm-hmm.
behind the scenes.
Yep.
Which, to be honest, was really more about them than it was him. You see what I'm saying? Like, so if you rewind everything back, is he really a bad guy, or were the Bulls just trying to make it seem as if that's a part of the reason why they got rid of him?
Mm-hmm.
More to support your point, in Minnesota, he was complaining about Wiggins and Towns not trying hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's bared out.
Yes.
Then he goes to Philly, and he's like, wow, this locker room's a mess with Embiid and Simmons and all that and Brent
Still
Brown.
Is.
He was right there. Now he goes to Miami, and he's got a bunch of hard workers, and what happens?
But like, the people, it's easy for people to say, well, he's been on four different teams, 4 different years. He sucks. Dude sucks. It's like, no, he actually wins. He wins basketball games. Sorry, he works hard.
Not afraid to take that last shot.
And to Eric's point, look at the other locker rooms mm-hmm. that he's been disgruntled with.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, look at the Heat. An organization that knows what the H they're doing.
Yep.
With people running the organization, Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, who have won.
Mm-hmm.
They have credentials. You never heard Butler really having a big issue with Tom Thibodeau, right?
No, loved him. Went to Minnesota.
Right. And when things didn't go well in Minnesota, Thibodeau was on his way out.
Yes. Because here's the thing. When you demand the most from everybody day in and day out, you can come off and people can call you an ass, right? Like, people can say that's a bad guy. He's a bad guy in the locker room. You know, he's not good for the culture, whatever. But ultimately, Jimmy Butler was good for the culture because he demanded excellence, just like Tom Thibodeau did. That's why when he went to Philly and Embiid's half trying most nights, and he's like, well, this is ridiculous.
Or out of shape, or whatever the case may be.
Well, that goes into half trying. If you're out of shape, are you trying?
Think about his perception of probably Ben Simmons, a player who doesn't have a jump shot, a player who can't shoot from three. Jimmy Butler developed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Butler entered the league as a player who could not shoot and did not have an offensive game, and he created the game for himself. Let's go to Alex and Willing. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Alex?
Hey, guys, I just want to say, I think Jimmy has got more of that mentality from the 90s where he just wants to put in the work, play ball, and he doesn't really care about who he's pissing off. Like, you can tell he's not really huge friends with anybody else on other teams. And so if he goes in there and trash talks and he just, like, outworks dudes, he moves on right after the game and says, I don't care about your feelings. I would have also loved to see how Jimmy would have responded when Boylan came in and made them all run sprints. I think for the media, that would have been a remarkable day.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Alex. I agree.
That boycott would have actually been a boycott.
That would have blown up in their face. I mean, how about this? Think about it this way.
Flip it. Would Jimmy be the guy that's been like, yeah, we played like crap. Get in there and we're all running sprints.
Well, you know, that's where, like, I get that they were traded for each other, but don't you kind of feel like the best person for someone like Zach LaVine to be around would be a Jimmy Butler type player?
Yeah.
Like, if Jimmy Butler was with the group of players the Bulls have constructed right now,
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like that would be the best medicine for Zach LaVine and for Lauri Markkanen, who's mm-hmm. just floating about
Near
the three-point line, not really having any insertion into games.
You need a star to kind of bring the team to gel them together. And Jimmy would like Zach LaVine's a star, but how, like, if there was an all-star draft, how many people are picking Jimmy before they pick Zach LaVine?
I think almost everyone in the league.
Everyone in the league is picking Jimmy first.
Hands down.
And Zach LaVine's not supposed to be the best player on your team. If Jimmy came in and was the best player on your team, and you had Jimmy, Zach, Lowry. But again, this goes into a whole butterfly effect.
Well,
if they would have Jimmy, they wouldn't have LaVine, they wouldn't have Lowry Markkanen, obviously, because the trade goes through.
Here's the end result.
I'm like Charlie Day with the thing.
You know what it is? It's those little pieces that you're trying to piece together are so much easier to find than the star. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when you have a star, you don't trade them.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
We're just over a week away from the start of the football season. We can't wait. Here in Chicago, we can't even figure out who the starting quarterback's going to be, let alone when we find out when the starting quarterback's going to be, which is one of the more ridiculous storylines that we've seen.
We know who it is.
Well, I mean, we know who it is. Does the head coach know when he can announce it or who it is or what he's doing?
He knows who it is. We know who it is.
All right.
It's just a matter of time. And if it's not,
Well, I mean, if it goes one way or the other, no matter who starts, hopefully they get off to a good start. Because if they don't, if it is Trubisky and it gets off to a bad start, this is going to be something, right? Like, you had all offseason, you made the move to get a different quarterback, and then you didn't even start him, and he starts out bad.
Here's the thing: no matter who they start against the Lions, if they lose and it's because of the offense, I cannot wait for Monday morning. Cannot wait for Monday morning.
Let's talk football with one of our favorite football guests, Connor Rogers from Bleacher Report and the Stick to Football podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Connor J. Rogers. Connor, can you believe since the last time we talked back in early spring that we thought the Bears would have a new quarterback, but yet the Bears don't even know who their quarterback is, and we're about a week away from football?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, guys. It's unbelievable what changes and what doesn't change in about 5 months here. And the Bears are definitely one of the most interesting teams in football because of this mystery quarterback battle. And, you know, you can only read so much from the local media that's been at practice. And, I mean, all signs, you know, here at least point to me that the organization, and I'm sure you guys feel the same, maybe you don't, the organization wants Mitch Trubisky to be the starting quarterback of this team. And I think the reason that that's the most logical prediction in all of this is because when you look at how it goes, if you don't start Trubisky, if you say he loses out to Nick Foles this summer, you're ultimately waving the white flag on what was a obviously very high selection of your quarterback. It would hurt anyone's confidence. And it's very hard to go back to him after that and expect him to be this kind of hero. Now, on the flip side, you give Trubisky, you know, still a young player, the reins this year. And as you said, if things start to go wrong very early, you have a guy that's been there before that can come in, stabilize an offense, even carry an offense at times throughout the postseason, which is pretty remarkable in Nick Foles. And then it seems like less impactful, and you're probably going into next year looking to draft a quarterback again, moving on from Trubisky. So that's my read, my sense of the situation. What I've heard from people I've talked to going back to when they acquired Nick Foles, and now we just have to wait for week one to get here.
So zooming out to the 10,000-foot height and looking down at the Bears, we've seen a lot of, you know, power rankings come out, preseason power rankings. Some of them have the Bears as, like, you know, the 26th team in the NFL, and some of them have – most of them are below the top 15 in the league. They're a bottom 15 team in the league. So – from your perspective, what do you think of this team as a whole? We know the offense isn't there, the defense, you know, they've added some pieces, they've lost some pieces. What do you think of the team as a whole going into this season?
They're frustrating because they're in that category of the NFL of treading water, right? And that's one that you really don't want to find yourself in. You're a team that you have a pretty good defense. You have some really key pieces on that defense. You have players on this offense. Allen Robinson is one of the most underrated wide receivers in all of football. I know he got banged up, but I have big-time expectations, big-time NFL expectations for a guy like David Montgomery. I think they have the answer now with this tight end duo. Now, I'm not the biggest Jimmy Graham guy, but, you know, are you going to be funneling the offense through him? I hope not. I don't think those are the expectations there. Cole Kmet is the guy of the future there. So this isn't a bad roster on paper. they just have key holes, guys. You know, offensive line is definitely an issue. Quarterback, unsurprisingly, I think will be an issue for them again. And the external issue is they're in a hard division in football. Green Bay is a great football team. Minnesota's a really, really good football team. You know, the Lions, I think they're going to be worse than the Bears this year, but they do show up randomly at times throughout the season, especially when Stafford is healthy. So for the Bears, to me, they're just kind of this middle-of-the-pack, six-win team. Now, I always say in the NFL, a couple bounces, a couple calls go for you or against you can give or take away two wins. So that's why I think the Bears are just this middle-of-the-pack team right now. The good news for them is, like I said, there are pieces on this roster from over the years where if you can address, if you have to go address quarterback in next year's draft, which is a quarterback-heavy draft, and you can add a piece or two on the offensive line, they aren't like a Miami. They aren't like a Washington football team where they're just blowing it up and starting over. They just have serious retooling to do at key spots in my eyes.
Connor Rogers talking football with Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. When we look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tom Brady obviously joining the team in the offseason. The defense was a bit underrated in my estimation from last season. How much better does Brady make this offense? And will this team be one of the better teams in the NFC?
I think so. And listen, I'm not coming out here and saying that the Bucs are going to win 14 games or anything insane like that. But they are going to be a factor. And the reason is a word I actually just used for Nick Foles, and this is way more significant, stability at the quarterback position. Jameis Winston is a guy that, sure, he can go out and throw 30 touchdowns and have some eye-popping numbers statistically, good and bad. Brady is a guy that he's simply just not going to give away the football. Forget the rate of Jameis Winston. He's going to give away the football at an alarmingly low rate in the NFL. He brings a leadership and a confidence to that organization that I personally don't think they've had in quite some time. Rob Gronkowski, from everything we can hear, the year off was good for him. He looks good. We know what Mike Evans, Chris Godwin can do, Bruce Arians. They've solidified that offensive line throughout the offseason. And that Todd Bowles coach defense has a lot of young pieces, but he's somebody that's developed young pieces in the past. So I think when you look at it as a whole, it's a very good football team. I consider them the favorites in their division, and we know the kind of postseason experience they have with Brady under center. That's what really matters in the end for that team.
You mentioned the Lions a little bit ago. If Stafford can stay healthy for the entire season, can they make that jump and become a division-winning contender?
I don't think so, just because their roster is so – their roster and coaching, notably, that's a big one as well. It's behind Green Bay and Minnesota right now, and the Bears. I mean, they're simply in last in those categories in the division right now. Now, a healthy Stafford, sure, he can get you competing. You can be maybe an eight-win team. You can give good teams a tough time. But when you look at it right now, we saw what Green Bay did, and they have the best pass rush duo in football. They still have Aaron Rodgers. They still have some really good players on that offensive line. They're a run-heavy team with multiple running backs that can get the job done now. And Matt LaFleur had a phenomenal debut season as a head coach last year. Minnesota scares you because of the veteran presences, whether it's Gary Kubiak, you know, calling the offense, notably the run game, obviously, you know, with Zimmer there and the defense getting Yannick Ngakoue replaces Everson Griffin, so they still have the pass rush. I think for the Lions, unfortunately, they're just behind in every key area compared to those teams. And I think Matt Patricia is one of the most notable coaches on thin ice going into this season.
Connor Rogers talking football with Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. I've seen some places people picking the Denver Broncos as a surprise team coming into this season. What do you think of the Broncos, and what do you think of Drew Locke? Do you think he's the real deal at quarterback?
I think they're a young, exciting team. Now, the problem for Locke, there's a lot of good things, right? We know Locke's athleticism, his arm strength. I think he flashed a lot when he got to play last year. Cortland Sutton, one of the more underrated top wide receivers in the game. They go out and draft KJ Hamler and Jerry Jeudy. They have two very capable running backs in their backfield in Phillip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon, and guys that can catch the ball, which is very important. They're really weak on the offensive line right now, guys, and that's a problem for a young quarterback, no matter what weapons are around him. So I think this is going to be a good football team. They're excited. They'll have Bradley Chubb and Von Miller, you know, notably Chubb back from injury, so that defense has a lot of juice up in the front seven. The problem is they're in the same division as the Chiefs. Now, can they compete as the second-place team in that division? Of course they can. The Chargers just losing a guy like Derwin James. I think the Raiders have made some nice strides, but they just don't seem like a team that's poised to have this 10 or 11 win season right now. So the Broncos, they have a veteran defense. They have a lot of good weapons at the skill positions. The offensive line, I think, is going to be very shaky week in and week out. It puts a lot of pressure on the young quarterback. Now, when I evaluated Locke, I looked at him as a very early second-round pick. You know, he has a little bit of a draft day slide. All the talent is there. But the decision-making and the overall processing of the quickness of the decision-making in college was something that he really needed to work on. But the Broncos, seeing that, they have players that can operate in a quick-passing, one-read offense. I think he'll be fine. You could throw it up to Cortland Sutton. Jerry Jeudy has great separation. Hamler's the guy that wins downfield. Two pass-catching backs. I think he'll do fine this year. I just think the Broncos still might be one more year away.
The NFC West is absolutely stacked this year. Who do you think comes out of that division, and do you think the Cardinals can take a jump with Kyler Murray in his second year?
Yeah, I think they will. Now, will they take a jump to first place? I don't think that's in the cards right now yet. But when you look at it for that division as a whole, continuity is the theme of this very bizarre pandemic, you know, times we're living in, where you want, obviously, the coaching staff coming back, coming off a year where they made it to the Super Bowl with the 49ers. I think they're a team that the run game is just so important and so consistent. You know, they still have Robert Saleh coaching the defense. They still have Mike McDaniel working under Kyle Shanahan to develop the run game. And they got better. This is something nobody talks about. You know, Trent Williams is 80% of the player he was in Washington. They got a huge piece on the offensive line for an offense that was already good. So when I look at the Niners, I think they're going to repeat in that division. Seattle's always going to make it very, very interesting. I think we see the Rams take a little bit of a step back this year, kind of the second year in a row where Arizona's going to be giving them a hard time. But if you look at the division that racks up the most wins in football this year, that's the one.
Connor, we have about 30 seconds left. I just need to ask you, is Sam Darnold going to be okay? Are the Jets going to be okay and get through this season?
I don't think so.
Oh, no.
I just had this conversation with Jim Nagy that works at the director of the Senior Bowl, and we're like, man, not going to be easy for Sam. Listen, guys, we're used to the pain over here in New York, all right?
Thank you, Connor. We appreciate it. Good luck this football season.
Yeah, let's catch up soon. Have a good one, guys.
That's Connor Rogers from Bleacher Report and the Stick to Football podcast. It's fantastic. Follow him on Twitter at Connor J. Rogers. I had to ask the Sam Darnold question because I know he's a Jets fan. So, you know, we're stuck in Trubisky hell, but I feel like there are two teams in the National Football League that are about to enter the same vortex that we're currently in as Bears fans. They are Cleveland Browns fans and New York Jets fans. Because if Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold do not progress to the next step, to the next level in this season, then they will enter the Trubisky zone where both the Jets and the Browns are going to be searching for quarterbacks next season.
Well, yeah, and it's like a three-quarterback draft.
Yeah,
it's like it's a two-quarterback draft and
then a maybe Trey Lance.
He's going to play one game this year, so you have that to judge off of, and there could be like six or seven teams that need quarterbacks.
All right, we are done with the show early tonight because the Jazz and the Nuggets, Game 7 of the first-round series. Coming up next, Jazz and Nuggets right here on ESPN 1000. Bleck and Abdal, we will be back with you from 6 to 8 tomorrow night. And we'll talk to you tomorrow at 2 with Waddle and Sylvie.
You're listening to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Side of the odds, isn't it possible that the Packers are the best team in the division still?
Yes, but at the same time, too, Vegas is looking for value, and they look at us local Chicago guys, and they're like, 50 to 1.
Hey, there, 50
give me,
to 1.
Give me the 50 to 1.
Let me throw the house on it there.
So you're absolutely going to get that. They know if they set that Chicago number high enough that enough of us will bet it.
All right, there you go. Super Bowl odds, divisional odds. We continue to preview for the NFL season with our Back to Football segment here on the show. Tomorrow night at 7:35, we will bring you another Back to Football segment as we count down just about a week away from the start of this football season. The Texans and the Chiefs, they kick off on Thursday night of next week.
You're listening to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home.